brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
The standard you walk past is a new standard you set. We have to sustain the standard, and that's by not just allowing something to happen. You have to sustain it, which means you have to have hard conversations. Leadership is hard. Leadership is uncomfortable. Leadership is not about being your friend. Leadership's job is to drive the culture and drive behaviors.
Jeff Becker is a certified mental performance and life coach and the founder of Jeff Becker Mental Performance Coaching, a company that provides peak mental performance coaching to elite athletes and coaches, as well as corporate leaders and teams. Jeff is also founder and former co-owner and director of Powerhouse Hoops. He's the lead director of the Chris Paul CP3 Rising Stars All-American Camp, as well as the lead coach at Camp Asia Elite Basketball Camp. Becker was a 4-year letter winner at Augustana College and is the author of the book, Tender Lions, Building the Vital Relationship Between Father and Son. Hey, Hoopheads, this March, our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $2,000 off the Dr. Dish All-Star, Rebel, and CT Plus. And don't forget their Anything Is Possible giveaway, too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details.
Hi, this is Andre Cook, the head men's basketball coach at St. Edward's University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with mental performance coach, Jeff Becker. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this afternoon, but I am pleased to be joined by Jeff Becker, mental performance coach. Jeff, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Let's rock and roll, Mike. I'm excited, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thrilled to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the things that you've been able to do in your career. Let's start by just giving people a quick overview of where you are right now, what you're doing, so that people have some context as we get into the rest of our conversation.
I am in sunny Scottsdale, Arizona. What I do now is I'm a mental performance coach and, specifically work with basketball players and teams, where I work and focus on how mindset affects performance. And I think the best way to kind of explain that is my mission statement is to increase performance by impacting the mindset, habits, and routines, because I truly feel that, what I've learned through this space, we'll kind of dive deeper into how I got into this. But, you know, if there's only the physical skill set, and I'm sure you're a lot like me, Mike, where we've coached hundreds, if not thousands of players that are very skilled and talented, but they're probably mentally not all there. They are mentally soft. They complain. They can't fight through adversity. And then so they're never reaching their peak performance level. You know, and so it's kind of like, how can I help maximize the mindset? Because if we can maximize the mindset, the skill set will take care of itself.
Absolutely. I think that there's no question as we look at sort of where the game of basketball has evolved, but where just performance has evolved. There was so much of it, I think, for a long time where it was just people were looking at those physical skills and the physical tools that someone had. And so often we neglected the mental side of it. And it's great to see that we have now in the world today, we've sort of accepted the fact that if you're going to be at your best, not only does your body have to be right, but your mind has to be right. And so we're going to dive into some of the ways that you help athletes and business people do that in terms of their day-to-day performance. But let's start by going back in time to give people a little bit of your background. Tell us about how you got into the game of basketball when you were a kid.
Man, grew up on the west side of Chicago, grew up in Maywood, Illinois. where I really do think in my second life, I probably should be like a volleyball player or a swimmer, but all we did was hoop back in the day. And, you know, Maywood is, has a rich history of basketball players from, you know, Open Gyms was Dean Shannon Brown and Evan Turner and, you know, Jacob Pullen, all time leading scorer at Kansas State, you know, we had all these just studs. And so basketball was just all I knew. My mom was actually is, in the Illinois State Hall of Fame for basketball, softball, volleyball. But from there, I went and played at, Division III Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. Loved it, loved everything about, you know, we were successful, won 3 straight conference championships. And then, from there went and was a video coordinator in Northern Illinois. And got to see kind of the Division I limelight. That took me then into coaching in the western suburbs of Chicago for 2 years at Wheaton-Warrenville South High School. And then over the last 10 years, I've been out here in Scottsdale in the Phoenix area, where I moved out here when I was 24, 25, to just start club basketball, to start club basketball and training. That grew into, you know, from 6 teams to 36 teams to 36 teams that we had about roughly, you know, Powerhouse Hoops was the name of our program. We built the facility out here. You know, so I've been around basketball for, you know, 15, 20 years from the coaching side, and, you know, it's been around my life forever, and, I'm super blessed, but I'm also super, super passionate about, how to utilize basketball as a tool for life. And I've seen it so much, and I'm sure you have as well, Mike, is just, so many don't utilize it the right way. And so, I truly believe that, that basketball is the best tool and the best gift that, that God has given us to be able to, make us a better person, better husband, better spouse, better leader, better friend. But we have to use it the right way.
That's well said. And I think it's something that when you look at the direction that coaching has gone, it certainly started to trend in that direction, which I believe is something that is great for the game and also all the people that participate in it, from players to coaches. And I just think it makes such a huge difference when you can use the game to not just improve somebody's basketball skill set, but you can also use the basketball to improve their life, which is exactly what you're talking about. When you went to Augustana, were you thinking coaching as far as what you wanted to do as a career, or was that something that as you're going through your 4 years and you're seeing your playing career start to come to an end, that, hey, maybe I want to stay involved in the game and get in coaching? Or just what was your mindset when you went to school about what you thought you wanted to do when you were an adult?
Man, first of all, I'm probably a lot like a lot of 18 to 20 year olds. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life.
Absolutely.
I was just trying to play basketball.
For sure.
But no, I didn't. Honestly, my master's in criminal justice. And again, kind of growing up on the west side of Chicago, I saw a lot. I experienced a lot. And so I always thought I wanted to give back to the inner city. And that's something that I'm extremely passionate about. I've always said this is my two biggest passions are basketball and giving back to the underserved. And, you know, so I thought I was going to get into, you know, before I really dove deep into this, I was a probation officer. I worked in juvenile prisons. But for me, the opportunities that arose, whether that was Northern Illinois, you know, as a young, I don't know, 22, 23 year old video coordinator, or moving out here and just kind of having the opportunity to start a club and training program. I always wanted to kind of just live the, you know, just don't play the what if game 5, 10, 20 years from now. And I was like, well, hey, I have a master's to fall back on if this thing doesn't work. And quite honestly, I'm so blessed, man. And I'm so fortunate to be able to still have basketball in my life. But I had no chance at 18 to 20 years old, would I've ever thought that this was possible.
All right. So that first experience at Northern Illinois, tell me a little bit about what that was like and sort of how that maybe influenced where you were going to go from there.
Great question. You know, I learned so much because I came from such a cultured history and successful program at Augustana College, where, you know, we were roughly 23, 24 and 6 every year. You know, going to the Sweet 16, year or two, and, seeing what high Division III basketball is like. And let's be honest, you know, I go to Northern Illinois, which is a mid to low major. We went from the year before I came, we were 10 and 20. And the year after when we got fired, we were 9 and 21. You know, and for me, I got to see so much of the goods and bad, and the but learning from not only the head coach, but just building the relationship with three of the assistant coaches that I still am so close to today, of what it takes to just, you know, because as a player, you don't see any of that behind the scenes stuff. And I thought I knew a lot because we were successful at Augustana. And then I go to Northern Illinois and I'm like, I know nothing. You know, I know one system and one system, one sets of baseline out of bounds and one way how to break a 2-3 zone and one press breaker. And I was like, man, I am way beyond my years. You know, but for me, one of the best learning experiences that my assistant coaches always told me was just like, hey, you have to write your own manual. One, write your own manual, and two, be a sponge every single day. And I think that's what I did best was just ask a lot of questions, you know, don't be afraid to ask for help and dive in, fail forward.
So as you go through that experience and you see kind of, again, you have the curtain sort of pulled back, as you said, I think that's one of the most interesting things when you talk to guys that previously played and then they go into coaching, especially if it's something that they haven't thought about necessarily. I think there's, you know, there's some guys that from the time they're like eight, they're like, I know I want to be a coach. And then there's other coaches that they're playing career ends. And all of a sudden they're like, hey, I want to get into coaching. And when that curtain gets pulled back, as you said, there's a lot of things that you realize, hey, I don't know nearly as much as I thought I know. And you made a great point. It's one that I've made on the podcast a lot is when I started coaching, similar to you, I knew what my high school coach did and I knew what my college coach did. And pretty much from a coaching standpoint, that's all I knew. And so I kind of was maybe more arrogant than most people. And the fact that when I got my first coaching job, I just looked around and said, well, I was a really good player and I'm going to be a really good coach. And you realize very, very quickly that you don't know very much. And I know way less right now at age 53 than I knew when I was 22 or 23 when I got my first coaching job. And it's just interesting how when that curtain gets peeled back, what you see. So that experience for you at Northern Illinois, how did it impact your decision moving forward in terms of, were you like, ooh, I'd really like to stay in college coaching? Did you see the lifestyle that guys were living and be like, you know, it's a lot of time it's taken up. Maybe there's a different path. Just when you finished there, what was the mindset as you look for your next opportunity?
Yeah, that's a good question. I still vividly remember the day we were fired. You know, I'm 22 and I remember sitting in our head coach's office with the rest of our staff. You know, this is the day after we lost in the MAC conference tournament. And I just remember being like, well, I'm fine. You know, I'm 22. I'm just getting my head in the game, but I'm literally looking around the room and one person just got married. One was expecting their second kid. One person is on his, you know, fourth team in 6 years. He's traveled, you know, all around the country to find the next job. And I was like, is this really for me? And there's no zero. Please don't get me wrong. That there's zero disrespect to Division I coach because it is a grind. But it wasn't for me, you know. And I have some of my best friends and some of my greatest relationships are Division I coaches still to this day. But for me, I was just like, is this really what it was? You know, and so that's how I actually ended up working at the juvenile prison, go back to working my master's and my master's degree, working at the juvenile prison and just coaching at the local high school. But to me, it was just like everyone has their own journey. Everyone has their own path. And for me, that was kind of the first time where I was like, I need to do what's right for me, not what sounds cool and sounds like a cool title. But for me, it wasn't the right path. And I don't see myself ever wanting to go back to the Division I path.
How did that opportunity working with the high schools there in Arizona, how did that lead to forming the club team and kind of getting into what you guys did next from a business perspective?
Yeah, good question. So actually, when we got fired at Northern Illinois, one of the associate head coach, Sundance Wicks, who's now at the University of Wyoming, Sundance came out here and started in Phoenix. I'm sorry. He came out here to Phoenix and started training. And then Sundance was like, hey, this was about a year and a half later after training, and I'm still at the prison working at the high school. He said, hey, we're going to start club basketball. We're going to start with six teams, but I need kind of like a number two guy. I just need you to come out. And honestly, I was like, hey, okay, cool. I'm 23, 24. I packed up my car. I told my parents, hey, mom, I'll be back in Chicago in 8 months, or I'll be back in August. I'll be back. And, you know, after the club season, I didn't know, you know, and I literally slept on Sundance's couch for 6 to 8 months. But I found a passion, you know, in Sundance. If you guys don't know who Sundance Wicks is, he's one of the most contagious, if not the most contagious individual I've ever been around. You know, and he just taught me how contagious and how impactful you truly can be on a player's life. And I fell in love, you know, I fell in love with the training, the impact, the mentorship of the individual. And I didn't want to go back. And so I was kind of on this mission to start with the club. You know, we started with six teams. I was on this mission to just be like, I want to make some money doing this. And I don't want to make money. I want to make this my lifestyle. I want to make this who I am, because I fell in love with the training, the coaching, the mentorship, and being able to impact a kid's life. Because I do think, you know, from that 14 to 18 year old range, they are extremely impactful. You know, and let's be honest, they don't really listen to parents at that age, but they'll definitely listen to their trainer, their coach. So that's kind of how it all started 10 years ago.
What were the challenges in building that business? And obviously there's a lot of people, no matter where you go in the country, there's a lot of people in this space, and more now probably than there were 10 years ago, but nonetheless, there's a lot of competition out there. So what did you guys do to build that business and sort of differentiate yourself from the other clubs that were trying to do similar things to what you guys were doing?
Great question. You know, I have always tried to hold myself to a higher standard, you know, and whether that's in club or whether that's in whatever is, and I say this to a lot of people, you know, now as people will ask, you know, well, what do I do next and how do I do that? And I'm just, how are you different? You know, there's a new club, there's a new trainer on every corner, new mom and pop shop. But what is that for you? You know, and so for me, I think one of the biggest things is how I showed up every day, the passion, the energy, the positivity, but also the knowledge base. And you know, you also have to understand your target audience. A lot of people think you're selling to the kid, but actually you have to probably sell to the parent, because the parent is probably the one that's writing the check. And I don't mean that in a sleazy or mean way, but I also mean that in, you have to impact the heart of the player, but you also have to impact and understand that the parent is investing in their most precious possession, which is their child. And so if you can understand that you're going to change and impact and redirect a child's life, that also is going to help the parent and, you know, want to reinvest in you as well. So you have to look, it's hard because, you know, most basketball players just want to have a basketball mind, but you also have to have somewhat of a business mind as well, which is, you know, again, this is a never ending journey for me, but, you know, I'm still learning 10 years later, but it was, something new I had to look at from a new lens, I think 10 years ago.
What part did you like about the business side of it? I think that's always an interesting question, because there's some parts of it that you're like, I could leave that, take it or leave it. But then there's other parts where maybe you get excited about web design or just the marketing piece of it. Was there any part of the business side of it that you really took to?
Quite honestly, no.
All right, there you go.
But honestly, I think it's the testimonials, you know, because you know, none of us really ever express how we truly feel about those that impacted us. And I think that I try to carry myself, conduct myself in a humble, grateful way. But when you ask for those testimonials, you hear that, or quite honestly, Father's Day, you know, I still to this day probably get texts from a handful of those players that never had a father figure in their life. And they reach out and say, thank you. You know, and those days, those texts, you know, give me chills, goosebumps, and bring tears to my eyes, to be honest.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff based on especially what you said in terms of sort of what your life's mission is, to be able to impact kids, and especially kids who are underserved. When you're able to provide that type of mentorship and leadership and give kids who maybe previously wouldn't have had an opportunity or wouldn't have had somebody to guide them kind of down their own path, to be able to step in and then have them reach out to you years later and express their appreciation. I'm sure that again, any coach, that's tremendously meaningful when you hear from former players that played for you and it's 5 or 10 years down the road and they reach back out to you and say what an impact the things that you did had on them and had on their life. And I think that that's one of the main reasons why, if we're honest, I think everybody who coaches, if you're doing it right, I think that's something that everybody drops and everybody feels like is a huge piece of why they coach and feels that gratitude when somebody reaches back out to them. So if you're a former player and you have a former coach out there, reach out, give them a call, send them an email, send them a text, because I know former coaches appreciate hearing from their players. There's nothing better.
Yeah, there's a great quote. Actually, I can't remember who told me this, but never underestimate your potential impact. And, you know, I'm sure you're the same way. I'm sure I haven't reached out to those that I can probably truly thank. And you never know if it'll be 10 months, 10 years, or 30 years down the road when you might potentially get that email or text or phone call. You know, and if I think back on my most impactful individuals or impactful moments, I probably have said thanks to maybe one of those individuals, which I probably should do a better job of now thinking about it. But for all of us, we could all do a better job. And you know, just but never underestimate your potential impact.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that this is something that has come up on the podcast a couple of times is just a lot of times as coaches, we think about some of the things that we say, and hopefully most of the time it's positive, but occasionally it's negative. And I'm sure you have things that you remember that somebody who was coaching you or somebody that was teaching you something that they said that you remember, that you could probably go back to them and say, hey, do you remember when you said X, Y, or Z to me? And that person would look at you like they were crazy, like you were crazy, and had no idea what it was that they said. And yet those are things that we hold with us. And so I think that's something important to remember as a coach, that the words that you use today can have an impact, hopefully positive, but occasionally negative. But it's just important to remember that those things that you may not even remember yourself are things that your players or your students or your clients carry with them for the rest of their lives. And so I think as coaches, it's really important to be cognizant of the fact that our words have a lasting impact, which is kind of what you're saying, right? You never underestimate the impact that.
You're spot on with that.
All right. How'd you get connected with Chris Paul?
Same thing. We were at the club basketball program. I got super lucky. They were starting something called the CP3 National Rising Stars Camp, which was, the best incoming freshman. And, you know, we were lucky. We had some talent in our upcoming, teams, where we had Marcus Howard, who obviously is phenomenal player, all-time leading scorer, Marquette, now is playing overseas, been in the NBA. You know, so we had Marcus coming through the pipeline, and so they invited Marcus. And I think selfishly, we also had a seventh grader who at the time was the number one seventh grader in the country, which I didn't even know ranking started that way. But at the time, there was this kid, we were doing three-man weave, and had a seventh grader join our 16U practice. And I'm like, guys, we already have 10 guys on the team. Why is this guy showing up? Who is this kid? They're like, he's the number one seventh grader. I'm like, I don't care about rankings. This guy, they go, oh, no, it's Marvin Bagley Jr. And I'm like, oh, all right, he's pretty good. So anyway, so CP3, the camp's trying to saw Marcus, invited Marcus, but like, hey, you know, we just have a volunteer coaching position. Would you like to come join us? And so, I was just like, sure, why not? And honestly, quite honestly, I was expecting the worst. I was expecting egos, entitlement, arrogance, as we all see, and, you know, selfishness from exposure camps, from EYBL, Nike, high profile programs, whatever, all the stigmas and stereotypes of the high profile programs. And I saw the exact opposite. I saw someone that aligned with our vision, my mission, my vision, my standards of just appreciation, high accountability, high standards, high energy. And so I started volunteering for this camp for the first four years, you know, on my own dime, on my own expense, traveling around the country. I found so much passion in building a fraternity of brothers, of coaches that were doing it the right way for the right reasons. And then for some reason, they were like, hey, we need a new lead skills coach. We need a new guy to kind of run the camp. And here we are, you know, 10 years into it almost. And, you know, they've presented me with kind of being one of the lead directors. I've been able to, you know, we roughly get about 6 or 7 camps each year, roughly touch 2,000 plus players a year. I get to, you know, put together the coaching staff and be able to be around 200 plus coaches a year that are just doing things for the right ways. And, you know, just for all of us, it's like coaches is, you know, we want to build that fraternity of brothers and sisters that are high impactful people. And for me, it's so fun for me to have a network of coaches from around the country that are just great individuals that are here to serve.
great lesson there for coaches in terms of you took advantage of an opportunity by going and working hard and doing that, as you said, on your own dime and volunteering and doing the work. And then eventually that turned into an opportunity that I'm sure you didn't see coming that first year when you went. I had no idea that it was going to turn into what it's turned into. And now you start thinking about what you're doing here on the mental performance side. When did that get on your radar as something that you became interested in? And then how do you go about taking that interest in that side of the business or that side of the athlete and turn that into something that you can do to help you to make a living?
Great question. I honestly thought I was always going to be a trainer and a club coach. We were running a successful program and, quite honestly, I just felt like my values or my perspective was shifting. I was about to get married and did I really want to work the evening hours and the long weekends and travel all over the place, this and that. And I just kind of things weren't aligned with kind of our new training facility and everything. And so, I didn't really know what I was going to do, quite honestly. I stepped away from our club unexpectedly and probably surprised everyone but my now wife. Actually a mentor, AKA, let's go back, 7, 8, 10 years, one of the Northern Illinois assistants, Todd Townsend hit me up and said, "Have you ever thought of mental performance coaching?" I was like, "I have no idea what that even means." He goes, "I've been around a lot of high level programs, this and that." He goes, "And we bring in a lot of these speakers, a lot of consultants, a lot of mental performance coaches." He goes, "And every time I hear these guys talk, I think of you." And I'm like, "I don't even know what it is." He goes, "Well, a lot of programs have a sports psychologist now at Division I level, but a lot of sports psychologists can't relate to the player. They don't either take the time to know them. There's a lot of stigmas and stereotypes, especially for us as men. I don't want to go talk to a psychologist. But they'll talk to probably you because you relate to them." So I was just like, "All right, cool." And so, I started looking into it, and I've always been kind of a self-improvement, self-help book guru, whether I podcast and read books and all this stuff for my own self. And so I started diving in I've been super blessed, obviously, because of the past with my club. I had families that trusted me. I had players that already viewed me kind of as a coach and as a mentor and guidance. And so when I kind of transitioned into the mental performance world, I already kind of had some stored knowledge, one, for my own development, but also a kind of a network of players. And a network of obviously coaches and college coaches and athletic directors that already trusted in me for my values and what I've already lived for. And so that kind of really helped propel me into what I'm doing now. And obviously there's been a lot of stuff going on over the last 4 years. COVID has obviously helped me probably. But there's a lot of battles that obviously from the business perspective that I've taken and learned through. I'm super blessed. And I think this is really my calling. And like I said, I still get to wear shorts and a t-shirt every day and like basketball players.
I can relate to that. No question about it. I taught in the elementary school. I taught in a classroom for, 17, 18, 19 years. And then I've been in the gym for the last 10, and being able to put on shorts and a t-shirt, there is nothing that beats that. As a, you set that up as your life goal, maybe when you're 8, and to be able to achieve it is pretty good. As you got started and you made the transition, what's it like trying to get your first client and sort of explaining to people who previously knew you in one role as you move into this new role? What were those first initial conversations, outreaches, marketing, however you want to put it? How did you let people know what you were doing? And then how did you get your first clients in the door?
I'm sure it was an absolute roller coaster, and I don't know how I did it. Quite honestly, I just had to get over myself. I just kind of had to get, the ego, the big ego was so big of like, well, what are they going to think of me and this and that? I just had to ask. You just have to keep asking. And of course, you're going to hear no 1,000 times because everyone thinks you're just a basketball trainer. But you start seeing that there's individuals that under that see that side of the growth mindset, that see that or that those coaches or athletic directors that see that side of leadership, of culture building, of earning and building trust, of confidence and building chemistry. And I was like, yeah, sure, come talk to my team for free. And I did, you know, I talked to so many teams for free during COVID. I probably did hundreds of free Zoom calls for coaches and programs and athletic departments just to get me some reps, but also for more and more people to get me understand what I do, understand my name, my brand, my energy. And quite honestly, I thought I was going to be this guy traveling around the country, working in locker rooms, talking about culture. And then COVID hit and I started doing free Zoom calls. And after a few Zoom calls at the end, obviously I'm like, yeah, I don't have any questions. And this one mom unmuted herself was like, you do one-on-one calls? And in my mind, I'm like, well, we do now. And so that's why I started doing one-on-one calls. And so, realistically, I had no idea. Again, that word pivot, man. Like I just started pivoting. And here I am now to this day, super blessed and, continuing trying to grow and impact.
All right. Let's talk about both of those two sort of different segments. When you think about working with a team and building the culture, and then you think about working with individuals, there's obviously every team is different. Every individual is different in terms of what their needs are. But when you look at those two areas, is there things that are universal about what you talk with teams about or what you talk with individuals? In other words, are there major themes or points that you like to make with teams and with individuals before you break down into their specific things that they may be dealing with or the things that they may want to improve upon? I don't know if that question makes sense, but are there universal themes, I guess is what I'm asking.
I don't think there's anything universal, but I definitely think there's a lot of reoccurring, very high common themes. If I think of working with teams, I think leaders, not coaches, but leaders understanding their impact and, whether you're the captain or whether you're an upperclassman and understanding your behaviors, your attitude, how contagious you are compared to what a coach says. And I think there's really understanding how to build and earn trust. You know, trust is not built and earned through your title or position. You know, and I think that's what so many coaches or upperclassmen think, you're the leading scorer. That means absolutely nothing about building and earning trust. You know, building and earning trust is a shared experience through behaviors, through attitude, through how do they view and experience you? So I talk a lot about earning and building trust, which obviously then creates culture, you know, and I think a lot of misconceptions is that people are like, well, we don't have a culture. Well, actually you do. It's just, you know, do you actually, do you build it, you know, or do you just allow it to happen? And so really educating everybody about what culture is and what trust is, from an individual one-on-one call sessions or a small group sessions, especially I think during this time of age is eliminating distractions. I think so many of us, you know, we're in a world of more distractions than ever before. So we really focus a lot on the word focus, on awareness, on your perspectives, on your priorities. But then obviously when we work with male versus female, I think, you know, when I first started working with females, it's a lot about self-image, self-talk, building and understanding what confidence truly is. You know, on guys, it's kind of dropping the ego, and understanding that you're not as important as you think you are. But I think all of us, including myself, is that, that fear of other people's opinions, you know, and in the world of today of society where everyone is judged and compared of social media, kind of getting over yourself and understanding, that comparison trap is very powerful, especially for teenagers. And, it's can be a dangerous place nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're talking about building that trust and you're talking about developing leaders on your team, I think it's interesting that you headed it in the direction of developing players as leaders. Cause we always hear coaches talk about, right? A player led team is a team that is going to be more successful than if all the leadership has to come from the coach, things get challenging. And yet when you're talking about being a leader as a player, especially if you get to the high school level where kids are a little bit less mature and there's a little bit more of again, team dynamics and things that go on. Let's say you have a player who is trying to lead their team, and for whatever reason, they have to confront, right, and hold their teammates accountable, but maybe the culture hasn't been set that that's the way that things are done. How would you approach that particular scenario in terms of helping a player navigate that, or helping a coach to navigate and develop that type of player-led leadership? What does that conversation look like?
This is what I typically say, and actually I learned this from my therapist. I love my therapist because she breaks it down into sports analogies for me. But she goes, pretend that there's a tennis court, and Jeff, you're on one side of the tennis court, and you hit the ball over the net. That's your job, okay? Are you in control of how your opponent responds, how your opponent hits the ball back? I'm like, well, obviously not. She goes, then why are you concerned about how they receive it? Because your job, Jeff, is to say what you need to say. Your job as a leader, of course, I need to lead by example. I need to put in the work and the extra work, and I need to build all the foundational stuff as a leader prior. But if I'm trying to hold Mike accountable, my job is to hit the ball over the net, and how Mike receives it and how Mike responds, that's on Mike. But there's so many times us as leaders, we're so concerned about, oh, well, I got to be nice to Mike and I might hurt his feelings or he might perceive me wrong, this or that. Well, guys, guess what? Leadership is hard. Leadership is uncomfortable. Leadership is not about being your friend. Leadership's job is to drive the culture and drive behaviors. And so guess what? And let me ask you this, Mike. Mike, if you feel a certain way about that, if I trigger you, is that my work that I need to do, or is that your work that you need to do?
Yeah, it's my work, clearly.
100%. And so there's so many times, you know, I think it's in the book. I just lost it. Good friend or good teammate. You know, we're trying to be such good friends nowadays of, you know, hey, make sure you like my profile. Make sure you like this post. Make sure you comment on this. No, that's not what leadership is. Leadership's job is to drive the right culture, to drive the right behaviors.
It's really well said. And I think it's something that a lot of times we don't take into account when you start saying, hey, I've got to do this and it's up to my teammates or the other people that are a part of whatever it is that I'm doing to react in a positive way. And I think, as you said, if people can self-reflect, if teammates can self-reflect and start to look at it and say, oh, I see this person over here doing this, maybe I need to do that and self-evaluate. And then obviously, the more people you get to be involved in that cycle, then the more often you're going to get to the type of culture that you want to build. But I do think you're right that so often I think we analyze, okay, here's what we did. Now, is it having the impact that we wanted to have? And clearly that's important. But I think what you're saying is that you can't control how other people are going to react to what you're doing. You have to continue to do the things that you believe are right, that you believe are going to lead your team and your culture in the right direction. I think that applies obviously to coaches and players equally, I would say, correct?
100%. And heck, me and my wife's relationship, right? If I just,
yep.
You know, there's a culture in everything that we do. If there's two people, that unit, that is a culture. But so many of us just allow the culture to happen. And if there's no standards, if there's no values, if there's no accountability, then we're just allowing something to fester. And if for any of us as a leader, as a coach, as whatever that is like, you have to have a higher set of standards. And so, but so many of us are just like, well, I'll just let it pass this time. There is a great quote of the standard you walk past is the new standard you set. And so many of us, we just allow the standard to slip, to slip, to slip, to slip. But the standard you walk past is a new standard you set. We have to sustain the standard. And that's by not just allowing something to happen. You have to sustain it, which means you have to have hard conversations.
Having those hard conversations, I think, is something that some people do pretty well naturally. I think a lot of people struggle with that, especially when they're younger. When you talk about coaches who are 22, 23, 24, and they're just kind of starting out, I think there is that desire, as you said, to maybe not offend anybody, to want to be quote unquote friends with players. And having those difficult conversations is really where the growth is. The growth comes from those hard conversations. It doesn't come from, okay, this guy did this. I'm going to let it go because he's our best player. I'm going to let it go because he's having a tough day. And as you said, if you let those things go once, it becomes a lot easier to let them go twice. Before you know it, it's your new standard. And then you don't have anything. Well, like you said, you have a culture, but not one that you were intentional about building. You have one that just kind of happened because you let things go.
100%. You know, and I think all of us, if we think back to our most impactful coaches, most impactful mentors, most impactful people that you've ever been around. Now that I'm 35, I look back, they were hard on me. They held me to a standard. Like, one was 100%, one was my college coach. But like, I think back of like my 14-year-old youth group leader, you know, was the first person that really held me accountable. But like, why do I remember that 20 plus years later? It's because he held me to a standard. It wasn't just like, nah, Jeff, you're cool, you're good. No. You know, and so if you, almost all of us, I can guarantee we think back to people that held us to a standard, not just allowing something to happen.
And I think what's interesting there is that as a kid, you can't maybe articulate why that was important to you. I think as an adult, we have a better understanding of when somebody holds me to a standard, it allows me to raise my performance or raise what I do up to that level. But as a kid, I don't think we necessarily always understand what those people who are being hard on us are doing for us and why they're doing it for us. And yet ultimately, as an adult, when you look back and you say, hey, I want to, as you mentioned earlier, like being somebody who reads the self-improvement books and somebody who's always trying to grow and has that growth mindset, I think as an adult, we can maybe articulate it better, but I think kids need it in just the same way. They just maybe don't or can't verbalize it in the same way that we can as adults, kind of looking back on our experiences.
Yeah, obviously their brains aren't fully, you know, developed. And heck, I think honestly, this is why I got into this field so much, is because I think I needed this so bad when I was a 14 to 21 year old knucklehead. But there was so much stuff that I went through adversity wise and, family wise and stuff like that, that I think I needed a safe spot, you know, an unbiased opinion. I wasn't affecting, you know, someone that wasn't affecting my playing time, because there's so many times where, you know, you potentially want to go to the coach, hey, I'm struggling with this, but then you're like, man, coach affects playing time, or is he going to view me or perceive me differently? So I'm so blessed, man, that I'm able to have, be a safe spot, to be able to a sounding board for athletes and for players, but also be able to help improve performance, right? Because if I can make their mind clear, I know they're going to perform better. If they perform better, they'll probably get more playing time.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. All right. Final two-part question. Part one, when you look ahead over the next year or so, what do you see as being your biggest challenge? And then part two, when you think about what you get to do every day, what brings you the most joy about what you're doing right now? So your biggest challenge and your biggest joy.
Biggest challenge, I have an 11-month-old son. but quite honestly, man, is I'll say this for all coaches, is the balance. You know, I give this analogy a lot, is I want you to think of an upside down frisbee, and you have tennis balls on this frisbee, Mike, and one tennis ball represents what's important, you know, your financials, your family, your nutrition, your exercise, your job, what you do. And if one gets too heavy, you know, and it gets overloaded, the frisbee will drop, but it's okay, because it's your nutrition, it'll bounce back up. It's your exercise, will bounce back up. But there's one crystal ball on this frisbee, and that's your family. And if you stop worrying about your family and that ball falls, it doesn't bounce up, it shatters. And I think one of the biggest things for me right now is balance. And I think that's what almost every coach I've ever talked to is, do you let that crystal ball stay in that frisbee, or is it shattered already? So that's number one. Most important thing or most exciting thing for me, man, I hope you can feel it. I hope you can feel my passion, my energy, my excitement, just to be able to impact and serve, man. Those are the two words I live by every single day, impact and serve.
Well said. Impact and serve is a great way to approach anybody who's working with people. I think if you can do those two things, then you're doing something right. Before we get out, Jeff, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you, how they can get in touch with you, share website, social media, email, whatever you feel comfortable with. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Love it, man. Thank you so much. Guys, you can find me at all social medias at Coach Jeff Becker. It's coachjeffbecker.com. I think you can email me, Jeff at Coach Jeff Becker. So at Coach Jeff Becker is pretty much everything. And then I also have a weekly podcast I put out called The Champion's Life. Talk about mindset, culture, all that stuff.
Jeff, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to join us today. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoop Heads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.